Amen. All right, Lane. Thanks, brother. Good morning, guys. How are you? All right. You had some breakfast. It was some good stuff, right? Good stuff. Yeah, way to go. So help me say thank you to our kitchen team and all the guys that have been here fixing you breakfast this morning. Once again, this is an incredible gathering, just all of you coming and being here. I welcome each and every one of you. Those of you who are new with us today, man, thrilled to have you. And some of you are even becoming fossils around here. And we're grateful for that, that you're here and that you're a part of this every time we do a men's forum. And we love this experience together. Well, we're talking about stuff for men because in life, there's just a lot of stuff that trips us up, messes us up, tosses us up in life. And so I'm trying to get my hands around just some of the stuff that I think men need to address and need to try to fix, if you will, in life. And so last week we talked about doing the right stuff. And we focused on the whole dynamic of life management and time management and trying to really get our hands around the two goalposts of the Old Testament and New Testament that says in the Old Testament, teach us to number our days, and in the New Testament that says that we would walk and be wise and redeem the time because the days are evil. And so we use that as sort of a goalpost to help us, and then we talk through all the different dynamics of right stuff and right stuff in living. So today, I'm going to hit another of those major areas where we get some stuff that gets us in trouble, and that is we're going to talk about our mouth. Our mouth. And I'm not talking about eating. I'm talking about talking. Okay, so the question this morning survey is this. How many of you have ever said something you wish you hadn't? Put your hand up, okay? All right, and those who don't have their hands up are liars, and we all know that, don't we, right? I'm just telling you, there is no way in life in which you can more quickly and more significantly get yourself in trouble than what you do with your mouth and with communication. You've probably heard the phrase, I know you believe you understand what you think I said, but I'm not sure you realize that what you heard is not what I meant. I promise you that applies to your wife, if no one else, right? We've had those miscommunications, all of us have in life, and yet communication is a vital part of who we are and what we do. Our talk has a lot to do with what people believe about our walk. And how we communicate either builds trust or destroys it in life and in relationships. Because trust is the building block of every relationship. You can't have a relationship with anybody. I don't care what that relationship is if you do not trust them. And so we want to talk about building trust. We want to talk about the tongue. We want to talk about what we can do. And so today, I have invited a wordsmith of sorts to come and to be here with me. It's a man who has devoted his entire life to truth-telling and trust-building, and his name is Mark DeMoss. Mark DeMoss. Mark lives in Atlanta with his wife, April. They've been married for 31 years. They have three children, three great-grandchildren. I've been blessed to know Mark since his 20s. We first met in South Florida when he was traveling with Dr. Jerry Falwell Sr. and was working with him and helping to support some of the many needs that Dr. Falwell had in those days in communication. And earlier this year, Mark made national news when he closed a firm that he had started in 1991 called the DeMoss Group. And it was a large PR firm. In fact, the largest firm working with and serving faith-based organizations in America. And he has been a part of a lot of things that you've probably seen or known about over the last few years. A number of years ago, he was a part of the huge Promise Keeper event that took everybody to the National Mall in Washington. He was a part of helping Franklin Graham in response at 9/11 and his work with Samaritan's Purse. He helped to make both the announcement and to plan all of the funeral arrangements for the Billy Graham funeral after the death of Dr. Graham. He's worked with Prison Fellowship in their Angel Tree ministry. He was a part of working with Dr. Kent Brantley when he was named Time Person of the Year fighting Ebola in Liberia. Just a lot of these big stories and big events, Mark has been behind the scenes working with and doing those things, opening the Museum of the Bible. But earlier this year, Christianity Today magazine did a feature just called Lessons from Evangelicalism's PR Guru. And it was a little bit of a story of where he had been, what he had done, and the fact that he was closing down that PR business and making some significant changes in life. And so we've been friends for a lot of years. I think the world of Mark and of his life, he's been through some of the hardest things, some of the heaviest things, some of the most heartbreaking things, and some of the best things that have ever happened in the public arena, especially related to churches and Christian organizations. And so it is a tremendous privilege for me to invite him to come and to be here with us today. He, by the way, loves Augusta's signature sport, golf. And I might tell you, it is not only a passion and pursuit, he is very good. And while I wish that I could tell you that we've played a lot of golf together, about the only way that I could play with him would be to be his caddy, and then it would be to keep my mouth shut. That's the only way that would be good. So I say all that to say that today's focus is saying the best stuff. And in order to help me do that, I want you to help me welcome Mark DeMoss. Mark, come on out and join me if you will, buddy. Thank you. And pull us up a chair here. There we go. And have the opportunity to introduce you to all these guys and have you in the room this morning and get a chance to do that. So, some big things in your life, a huge year of transition in your life. Tell us a little bit about kind of what brought you to the point of saying, hey, it's time for me to make a change. I've been speaking for everybody else. Now I'm going to take a step. Speak something for myself, and I'm going to change the direction of my life.
So I had been running this PR firm for 28 years, and I reached a point where, first of all, I loved what I did. I loved virtually every day of those 28 years. But I think I reached a point where I still loved the practice of public relations. I didn't really like the business of public relations. Mm. I just decided I was going to get out of the agency business, not run a business anymore. And there've been a lot of changes in the world, in communications, in the public relations business. And I think I felt like to keep doing what I was doing was going to require kind of a reinventing our firm and our business model, and I didn't want to do that. Yeah. I didn't think I had the energy to do that. I'd been through a successful battle with cancer in 2017, and so all this kind of came together, and I just made a decision not to sell it or merge it, but to close it. And I closed it and helped all our people find other work. Yeah. And took a little break for a few months, recent months, and traveled some. And it's a good season of life right now, and I'm happy about it.
Wow. Well, cancer is a big thing in life, and obviously causes you to reset everything and to evaluate life and where you are. And I know for you, that wasn't the first time you had faced significant personal challenge and suffering. Mark is originally from Philadelphia. He was one of seven. Oh, we got a Philly? Okay, good. He's been in Georgia a long time now, I'm afraid. But I say all that to say that he is one of seven children, but at 17 years of age, suddenly lost his dad. And so I grew up dealing with just that challenge in life, and has been able to go on and do a lot of great things and to experience some great successes. But I'm sure just the reality of that event and then facing cancer in your own life was a big deal in terms of that. So,
yeah, it was. But you know, a lot of people deal with cancer, and I'm learning almost everyone that deals with it is dealing with a more challenging journey than mine was. I feel really fortunate and blessed. But, you know, I've been asked a lot what did you learn? What did God teach you through cancer? And I've concluded, I don't want this to sound wrong. I've said God didn't really teach me anything except this. Everything God taught me for 55 years before I had cancer was true when I had cancer.
That's good.
And if it reinforced the importance of being anchored in God's word before.
Before a storm,
comes, to have a grasp of God's sovereignty,
right,
and to rest in that. I mean, I went through months of chemotherapy and lab work and doctor's visits, and honestly, had no anxiety about it.
Wow!
And it was a good experience. Took me off the road, and I think April and I were not apart one night for 150 days or something.
Yeah.
It's good, and I'm in remission. I feel good. I'm healthy. Feel healthy, and I'm very blessed.
I'm grateful for that. Well, let's talk about communication
okay.
a little bit, because I think that you probably would be the first to say that communication is not about words. It's about wisdom. You're a big proponent of the pursuit of wisdom. In fact, he even wrote a book called The Little Red Book of Wisdom. I'll talk more about that in just a few minutes and a little bit more about what that book is about. But how did your career in communications create a passion for wisdom?
Well, public relations is really, at its core, the practice of public relations is really the business of providing counsel and
right,
advice,
right?
And I think which is a scary thing, because people are making decisions based on the counsel and advice that I give them, and so that really did for me keep you anchored in wisdom and on a constant quest for wisdom, because I found myself in a lot of hundreds of settings and meetings, confronted with very complicated challenges and crises and dilemmas that, depending on how things went, would impact a lot of lives,
yeah,
would impact budgets and health of large organizations. Mm-hmm. And so I really wanted to, I approached this very soberly, that people are listening to what I'm saying, and I want to make sure I have some wisdom beyond my own
right.
insights into a situation. So I've really I know, first of all, I guess it starts with recognizing that you need it.
Right.
We need wisdom.
We need wisdom in speaking.
And in speaking. And
representing, responding. Maybe that's the better word.
And not just in a professional sense.
Right.
I think we need, many or most of us in this room are married. We need wisdom in communicating with our spouses.
Right.
Responding to our children requires wisdom. Dealing with employees requires wisdom.
Right.
So you don't have to be in the professional, in the communications business
right.
to need this wisdom. I think we need it every day in
right.
every setting.
Well, and obviously we live in a world that has given a lot of focus to spin and spinning things. And, we see scandals and spins and scandals and spins, but somewhere beyond that, if there's credibility in your life and integrity in your life, it can't be a spin. You got to deal with the hard stuff. You got to manage the injury. You got to deal with all those different things. So how do you gain wisdom to do that? What do you do? What helped you? I mean, you've done this on so many levels, and again, behind the scenes of things that all of us have seen, we just didn't know. We didn't know who was behind or who was involved or what was happening. And so I just say that, how do you gain that wisdom?
I think that three ways primarily. One is hang around wise people. That sounds obvious, but these things are obvious. It's been said that wisdom is caught, not taught. So you can glean wisdom just from being around wise people. Secondly, I think I would recommend reading the greatest textbook on wisdom that's ever been written. And you don't need to go to the bookstore to get it because you probably have it in your home. And it's the book of Proverbs in the Old Testament. So, I began a practice that I really learned from my father in daily Bible reading. Reading consecutively from the Old and the New Testament and every day, and then one chapter of Proverbs and from Psalms. And Proverbs has 31 chapters, so if you read a chapter every day, you'll read the book of Proverbs every month. And I've been doing this half my life or so. I estimate I've read the book of Proverbs 350 times or something. Wow. And still find either certainly reinforce wisdom thoughts and learn new ones all the time. And so if you picked any other discipline in life or business or field of study and went and found the preeminent textbook and read it 300 times, you have a pretty good grasp of that subject. So I just think, Proverbs, I believe someone who reads Proverbs consistently will be a better man, a better husband, a better father, a better employer, a better employee, be better in every walk of life. Right. So that would be my second recommendation, is to read
Proverbs,
read this textbook. And then thirdly, ask for it. James 1:5 says, but if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives liberally and without reproach. So we can ask for it. You know, I think people have a misconception, I think, about wisdom, that it's somehow reserved for, gray hair, older people, wealthy people, well-educated people. And I think that's a shame to sort of surrender it to somebody else. It's available to all of us. Right. And it's really there for the taking.
Right. Well, and out of your lifelong pursuit of the book of Proverbs, you did end up writing a book yourself called The Little Red Book of Wisdom. I mentioned it a moment ago. And if it looks a little bit familiar, many of you probably know Harvey Pinnock's book, The Little Red Book, Lessons of Teaching in a Lifetime of Golf. Of course, we have quite a connection here in Augusta with both Pinnock and with Ben Crenshaw because of the Masters win the year he died. That's one of the most dramatic stories in golf. But you've just kind of taken things you've learned and you've put that together. We didn't buy copies, and we're not selling a book today. It is available on Amazon, just so you know that, and can get a copy if you want to. But I have gained much, much benefit. Many years ago, actually 12 years ago, I had my first copy of this book and have enjoyed oftentimes going back and just learning some of the things that you have shared in this book. One of the best ones that's helped me all my years of ministry was go buy some postage stamps. And it's a chapter that basically says one of the most powerful things you can do in your life is speak into the lives of others, but not just by the forms of quick communication that we use today. Nothing wrong with email, text messaging, all that. But there's just something about people getting a letter that took time to write and to pour out and to give that really can be something that is significant in influence in the lives of others. And so I just want you to know, through my ministry, that's been a practice for me every week of my life, to be sure that I don't just send out a lot of communication as in mass, which I do that. That's part of what I do. But I've really tried to make a habit of doing that. And I just thought you ought to know that's been a way you influenced me.
Thank you.
And something I'd done, but I think probably I would have let it slip in life had it not been for that encouragement.
Hey, let me mention two quick sort of personal anecdotes about Proverbs. One morning at home, my wife April was getting ready for something. She was running a little late, and I have a chair that I sometimes read in off our bathroom, and so I sat down to read my Bible, and April was getting ready, and she said, "Hey, I'm running late. Read me whatever you're reading." So I looked down. I'm about to read that day's chapter of Proverbs, and the heading on that chapter was "The Wiles of the Harlot." So I said,
"That was the context you wanted that morning, right?"
I said, "Okay, it's about the wiles of the harlot. Do you still want to hear it?" She said, "No, but I want you to hear it." and then secondly, when my son was graduating from high school, the night before his high school graduation, I wrote a note and went and stuck it on his pillow in his bedroom, just congratulating him for his high school years and telling him how proud I was of him. The next morning, I found a note on my desk from him, and I opened and read this note, and he was thanking me. And then he wrote a P.S. on this note that I'll never forget. He said, "P.S., I've been reading Proverbs every day since eighth grade because of you."
Wow.
And I didn't know he'd been doing it. And so now he's, that's been 8 years ago, yeah. Probably. So now he's well into his habit of reading Proverbs.
That's good.
And it's a powerful thing.
So do you have any just favorites that you would say are significant communication proverbs?
Well,
putting you on the spot, but not just asking.
There is Proverbs is full of advice around speaking and not speaking.
And that's another part of communication. You know that, right?
It's a big part.
That not speaking. You never have to apologize for something you didn't say. Never forget that. You never have to apologize for something you didn't say.
One of my favorite, I jotted a few down about communication, but one of my favorite would be that even a fool is considered wise when he keeps silent. When he closes his lips, he's considered prudent.
Yeah.
And then in the multitude of words, sin is not lacking, but he who restrains his lips is wise. He who guards his mouth preserves his life, but he who opens wide his lips shall have destruction. A soft answer turns away wrath, very powerful. Harsh words stir up anger. Whoever guards his mouth and tongue keeps his soul from trouble. Then do you see a man hasty in his words? There is more hope for a fool than for him. So I'm, my wife often, my wife's from the South, mostly from Georgia, and speaks quickly. I speak pretty slowly, and she, sometimes gives me a hard time about speaking too slowly. my slow speech is not just because I'm slow. I'm speaking carefully.
Yeah.
And
that's especially important with your wife, may I say.
it's important. I think a big part of speaking is not speaking, and
no doubt
being ready to speak when you do speak. And I would I would expand this thought too, David, about speaking to today, especially to texting and posting on whatever you post on Twitter or Facebook. To my knowledge, I've never written or posted or texted anything that I needed to retract. That's not because I'm so smart. It's because I was
careful.
And I took a little time.
That's a pretty big deal when a guy's job has been to do a lot of communication and posting and preparation to say, I've never had to retract it. And that's unbelievable.
And so we see today, you know, people send things they had to delete or created a big stir and went and tried to retract it. But once it's there, it's there. And just because you delete it doesn't mean everyone else who saw it, you know, deleted it or erased it. So I think caution, and this is why I need to read this. That's why I read Proverbs every day, because I want to be reminded again, and I want to read it again and again and again. So, you know, being slow to speak, Larry King, who's most of you old enough to remember Larry King from CNN, but Larry King conducted 50,000 interviews on his Larry King Live TV show. And he made this comment. He said, I never learned a thing when I was talking.
I never learned a thing when I was talking. That's
good. So, you know, we learn by listening, and then by listening and learning, we're better equipped to speak.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that, I think because we are a world that drowns in so much just free-flowing information and communication, that really is probably the greatest thing that we're struggling with, is there's no discretion, there's no discernment, there's no wisdom. And so we just go from one injury to another in relationships, in responsibilities, I mean, all sorts of things. And so I think there's tremendous wisdom just in hearing the need to pursue wisdom in your words, in what you say, and when to speak and when not to speak. And obviously, it's just human nature to be very impulsive, and the tongue flows very freely. Somebody once said that, you know, when God made us, He even gave us a lesson in our anatomy, and that is that He gave us two eyes and two ears, but only one tongue, and then He put it behind a cage of teeth to remind us that it's dangerous. And so just know that we need to look, we need to listen, we need to be careful about what we do. And though you've heard me talk to you about Proverbs and reading Proverbs, guys, fundamentals are fundamentals in life. I mean, that's really what it gets down to. And the fundamentals of life are geared to what goes on in the mind that controls everything else. And that's why that's so important. I kind of just throw you something here I didn't ask you about. And if you say, no, I just can't, that's fine. But any particular crisis or event that you could tell us about that really was formative in your life and something that you really had to walk through in terms of both delicate communication and real deliberate communication? Any example of that? I mean, obviously, I realize I'm talking to you about your life, your business, your clients, so I want to be careful about that. But
crisis, for whatever reason, crisis management really was my favorite, still is my favorite thing to do.
Probably learned that early on, speaking with Jerry Falwell Sr., right?
I mean, most people don't understand why.
Those of you who remember Dr. Falwell, remember he had a lot of things to say and took a lot of flack for it. So,
I've probably been involved in several hundred, you know, crisis situations, issues, navigating whether it's, you know, litigation or something that could really negatively impact an organization in a big way. Almost all of that work I did pretty discreetly behind the scenes and would be careful talking about. But I think I can describe some without, you know, giving names.
Name,
but
sure.
You know, this I dealt with a situation with a Christian leader who had been accused of some inappropriate behavior, and this is a very well respected Christian leader, and somebody actually blackmailed him and like literally with a extortion letter for demanding a large sum of money for in exchange for their silence, and yet he hadn't done what this person was accusing him of doing, and it got very, very tricky. And I mean, I worked on this for 6 months or so. You know, my name wasn't attached to it, but you know, I'm dealing with somebody's life and reputation, and
their family,
and their ministry and their organization. And so, you know, just lots of things like that. And then some were, you know, very public and just involved working with, you know, scores of media representatives. And, you know, when Billy Graham died early last year, we'd been working on that, those arrangements for a long time, and instantly we're dealing with media from all over the nation and the world, and that was exciting and an honor to be, you know, to be a part of.
How many U.S. presidents were there? Four?
No, well, two presidents came during the week to visit the family, but Bill Clinton and W. Bush came during the week to visit with the Graham family, and then President Trump came to the funeral service. But we had hundreds and hundreds of media, you know, there. So we've done a lot of work with
those things,
with that kind of thing too.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to how do you model the quest for wisdom with your children, with your family? What have you done to do that? And how do you, you talk a little bit about a wisdom test. What's a wisdom test that we can take in life?
So I think modeling wisdom, one, I think just the example, like I mentioned with my son, the example of reading Proverbs is a good start. And, you know, I picked that up from my father. Now my son picked it up from me. I'm sure his children eventually will pick it up from him. So, by the way, whether or not you're reading Proverbs, I think we ought to model as men being in the Bible every day. I do it almost always first thing in the morning. Did it in my hotel before I came over here. Other people like other times of the day, but I think that's an important thing we can model to our spouses and our children. And so I would start with that. And then I think demonstrate that you've learned some of this, and but in how we act and how we behave. And so there's no value in reading Proverbs every day if you're quick to speak and you spout off and you get angry when, you know, somebody upsets you. So I think we actually have to apply, we have to apply what we're learning and reading and gleaning from others. This wisdom test that I'm a big believer in is very simple. It is to ask yourself in any situation, not what's the right thing to do or the best thing to do or the smartest thing to do or the legal thing to do or the ethical thing to do, but what's the wise thing to do? And I believe there are lots of things that would not be wrong, wouldn't be unethical, wouldn't be immoral, but would be unwise. And I'll give you two examples. It's been my practice in the 31 years that I've been married to never be alone with a woman in any setting, in an office with a closed door, unless there's a window there, in a car, at lunch, at dinner, at breakfast, ever, public place or in private. So, and most people think that's pretty cumbersome, particularly in business. And maybe everybody can't do this, so I'm sensitive to that too. But I ran a public relations firm that employed more women than men. My second in command for 17 of those 28 years was a woman, and I ran a firm with her help for 17 years. Never had a meal with her. Never rode in a car with her. Never sat together on an airplane if we were going the same place. Didn't sit together on a plane. And so what's my point? My point is it wouldn't be wrong to ride to the airport mm-hmm. with her if we were going the same flight. It's not immoral, it's not unethical, it's not illegal, but I think it would be unwise. And how do I know that? I've helped a lot of leaders get out of a mess because they were...
They did something unwise.
They were with a woman, professionally or not, and it caused them problems. So another would be... And this is a tricky subject for a lot of people, but in the context of a wisdom test, I think it's hard to argue. So I don't use alcohol. Is it illegal? No. Is it immoral? No. Is it unethical? No. Some people make the case that it's unbiblical. I think you can make an argument that The biblical prohibition would be against drunkenness. It's debatable beyond that. But I know this. I think it's wiser not to drink than to drink. I'm gonna eliminate some problems from my life by not drinking. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how my body will handle alcohol because mm-hmm. I've never had it, ever. I'm not gonna test it. So those are wisdom tests. They're not. I wrote a whole chapter about that, and about alcohol specific. I wrote a chapter about both of those subjects, actually separate chapters. And so I don't approach them from some kind of moral high perch or preaching. I'm not preaching to anybody. I'm just saying I think. I think one path is wiser than the other path, mm-hmm. and it's a pretty. I think it's a pretty liberating way to approach things. Right. And so I would, the next time you're confronted with what you think is a dilemma, ask yourself what's the wisest decision? What's the wisest path?
I think that's so important because I think whenever it comes to communication, what we do, it's always about emotions and tactics and all that. But really, at the core of everything, it's not your words, it's the wisdom. And getting wisdom in your life is what is important. And when it comes to saying the right stuff, you got to have wisdom. And again, we're living in a world where there's just this free flow. There's no restraint. Everybody expresses themselves. And one of the great challenges to us as men is to say, let's step back from that and let's ask ourselves, how do we become wise in life? And how does that wisdom translate into the truth telling and the trust building of our relationships together? And Mark has obviously spent a lifetime doing this. I am so grateful for the integrity that I have observed over these decades, nearly three now that I have known you. And to be able to see that and know that, I felt like it would be good for you to be exposed to a man who's been involved in all these other things, but has managed, one, never to taint himself and his own character in the process of trying to deal with the mess of others, but also has helped to give wisdom to and guidance to. Let me just go ahead as a disclaimer and say that as far as I know today, I'm not in a crisis, so he's not here in a professional capacity with me. So let me just go ahead and make that real clear before we walk away this morning. And let me just say that if you would like to get a copy of the Little Red Book of Wisdom, just go to Amazon, as I mentioned, because I really do think this is one of those books you can pick up. Every chapter, I think he wrote it for men. It's short, it's simple, it's easy. It really is. In fact, let me see, there are 23 chapters. Is that what I'm seeing? Yeah, 23 chapters in that book. So that ought to give you a little bit of hope and a little bit of help, and it will be a great resource to give you. Also, let me just quickly say that I'm very excited that we are having Dr. Charles Lowry back with us this weekend. Those of you who are at Man to Man Conference know it was one of the best mornings, best experiences ever. And so he'll be speaking on this campus, but simulcast at Grovetown Sunday morning. But then the Relationships Matters Conference is from 4 to 6:30 on Sunday afternoon. And so you are welcome to come to either of our campuses and to be a part of that. Any parting word that you'd like to say?
Yes, thank you for sharing this stage with me this morning. And I'm amazed that this many men come out at 6:30.
It is pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, so thank you for, you've honored me by coming, and you've honored me by inviting me. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm grateful. And I have to say, yeah, how about that? Amen. Grateful to have you. And I am wise enough to know it's not what happens up here that gets you there. It's what happens over there. So thank you guys for coming. Next week, we'll be back together. Third part of our Stuff for Men series. And we're going to talk about how to handle the hard stuff. So looking forward to having you here, being back with us next week. Thanks again. Blessings. Have a great day.